Greetings, everybody. This is Patricia Corey, and the program you're listening to is Beyond the Matrix for people who dare to think outside the box of convention. And obviously, if you're tuned into BBS, that's what you do. So thank you for tuning in. I have so many issues that are very near and dear to my heart. And if you've been listening or reading any of my books, Syrian Revelations, you know that these range from extraterrestrial disclosure. The list is too varied to even try to approach now. But one of the most important things that I believe is happening on this planet, of course, is the chemtrail phenomenon, the abortion of our natural state of balance on the planet, and most recently, the utter war against the oceans and all the other ecosystems of the planet, but particularly the oceans, as we have seen in the Gulf of Mexico, which today we're going to discuss. I don't believe that was an accident. I'm sure many of you don't either. But we're going to hear from a professional, someone who has dedicated her life, someone I admire very much. Her name is Rosalind Peterson. She's been on my show before. She is dedicated to, well, she's an absolute warrior for Gaia. What else can I say? Dedicated to getting the information out to everyone of what's really going on in the covert activities against our planet, and calling everyone to responsibility to express our voice and save this planet, basically. I mean, there's no other way to word it. So let me just, before I bring Rosalind on, I want to just announce that I am on the islands at the moment, swimming with the whale, other dolphins, tracking the whales, making communication, looking at the ocean situation, wondering if the Gulf Stream is going to die. I mean, I'm involved here. So please be thinking about it. I know there's an ever-expanding consciousness about the dolphin and the whale's plight. We know what's going on in Talgi. Let's talk to her. Rosalind, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me again on your show. It's a privilege to be here with you today.
Thank you. It's a privilege to have you, Rosalind. You are such a true warrior. I mean, a person who walks her talk. And, of course, we will announce to everyone your website and how they can become involved with you directly during the show. So for now, I'd like to just where do we start? I mean, there is so much going on. But before we start, I should probably do the polite thing and introduce you as far as your qualifications. So for those of you who have not heard my last show with Rosalind, she is the California president and co-founder of the Agriculture Defense Coalition. This ADC is called, was formed in 2006 to protect agricultural products from uncontrolled experimental weather modification programs, which we all know, of course, what we're talking about. Atmospheric heating and testing programs, which we know is HAARP. And the latest ocean and atmospheric experimental programs that are being forced upon our oceans by the Navy and God knows who else. So, Rosalind, let's start with the latest. I mean, what have you to say about the Gulf of Mexico situation and what this means for the future of the oceans?
Well, in the Gulf of Mexico and the Atlantic and also the Pacific, the United States Navy has initiated a number of warfare testing ranges, each one to last 5 years in duration. They're going to be using sonar, toxic chemicals, bomb blasts, missile testing, gunnery exercises, torpedo firing, underwater detonations, research and testing, vessel sinking. They're going to be using thousands of toxic chemicals like lead and mercury, red phosphorus, aluminum-coated fiberglass. The list is tremendous on what they're going to be doing. And some of those, they're going to have some types of, it's all live fire. And if anything doesn't explode, it will sink to the bottom as live arsenal laying on the bottom of the oceans. And this includes the Gulf of Mexico. And in the Gulf of Mexico, also, the U.S. Air Force has a range in which they're going to be doing bombing exercises near the manatees. So the devastation in the Gulf of Mexico from the oil spill, and then the and all that that entails, and the oil on the bottom, and all these problems are going to be exacerbated when the Navy starts their five-year warfare testing programs there. And the environmental impact statement is online on my website, but it's also online. The Navy has a series of websites, each one detailing one of their environmental impact statements for all of their ranges. There are dozens of them in the Pacific, the Atlantic, and the Gulf of Mexico. Now, the one thing I'd like to quote, it's a very short quote, and I think that this pretty well sums up what's going to be happening here. This was a letter on June 19th, 2009, to the U.S. Department of Commerce from Senator Dianne Feinstein, U.S. Congressman Henry Waxman, and a group of other senators and congressmen. And the quote here is this: "The Navy plans to increase the number of its exercises or expand the areas in which they may occur, and virtually every coastal state will be affected. Some exercises may occur in the nation's most biologically sensitive marine habitats, including national marine sanctuaries and breeding habitats. 11.7 million marine mammals over 5 years are threatened or endangered."
Now, I know that anybody that's listening, and that includes me, is about to tear their hair out at these statistics. And I just want to ask you, obviously the excuse for these exercises is what? To protect the homeland from terrorists, right?
No, it's actually so that they can practice detonating weapon systems, and they can practice new sonar techniques. Some of these practicing will be over land areas and in coastal regions on land as well as the oceans. Idaho, for example, will be impacted over land. There's an F-35 jet that's going to be ecologically destroying Arizona because it's the noisiest jet in the entire world and can ruin your hearing and disrupt everything in its flight path. And so there's things happening all over the country because the Navy, in a GAO report back in 2002, came out and stated that the Navy was very frustrated because they couldn't practice because they were being foiled by U.S. environmental protection laws that were limiting some of the areas in which they could practice. And so they decided to go into these environmental impact statements and warfare ranges, divide the country and the islands like Hawaii, where there is an ongoing five-year warfare testing program right now, and to divide the nation up into these ranges. And instead of having one, you know, in other words, large area where they did some practicing, they decided to get them okayed for every single solitary individual range. And most people don't even know that these ranges exist. The map of all the ranges, the U.S. Navy map, which is a U.S. Navy map of the ranges, is on my website. People can go to my website at agriculturedefensecoalition.org, and they can see the different environmental impact statements and the maps.
What do you think is happening in the Gulf of Mexico? Do you really think that was an accident? And, I mean, you're talking about the Navy plan to test toxic chemicals, and here we have the perfect environment of a, I believe, induced oil disaster, and then the worst disaster we all know is the use of the Corexit, very cleverly titled, core exit chemical dispersant. So what is your take on that? I know it's a very delicate subject to be talking about, but then that's what you and I do.
Well, the thing about the thing about this process is that that our government under Minerals Management Service, the Department of Interior for many years, has gone forward with no, in other words, no basis for having any idea they don't know what the environmental impact was going to be if something happened. And they didn't check out any of the plans to say, well, we can do this or that if something happened. They didn't even know if it would work. So our government has allowed all of this drilling, offshore oil drilling, in these areas to go on, and in the hopes that nothing would happen. And this is the same with the Navy program that's proposed now. They're saying, well, we're going to hope for the best, that we're going to do all these warfare testing exercises, we're going to do these bomb blasts, and if we destroy 11.7 million marine mammals, well, that's too bad. That's just going to, they're in the way of our practice. And so the oil spill and all the things that have happened to the people in the Gulf of Mexico and the Corexit, the toxic chemicals from that, is just going to be exacerbated by all of the toxic chemicals that the Navy is going to be using. Cadmium, for example, chromium, iron, lead, manganese, mercury, zinc, benzene, toluene, naphthalene, potassium perchlorate, all of these things, titanium compounds, are all going to be in the Gulf being used. And one of the interesting parts of this is that the Navy says, well, there's some toxic chemicals we're going to put in drums, and then we're going to dump over the sides of our ships in safe areas in the Gulf and in the Atlantic and in the Pacific. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, what safe areas? So it's for the Gulf of Mexico, it's going to compound every single problem that's there now, and the bomb blast could trigger fissures underwater that could allow methane and could allow oil to escape. It could seriously damage the wells that are there now, and no one is looking at this issue. I'd like to say one last thing. The Obama administration put the Navy in charge of writing a report, which just came out this week, on how the Gulf of Mexico could be restored. And it's a nice, long, detailed report, but the Navy forgot to mention in their report that they plan 5-year warfare testing in the Gulf of Mexico. So whatever restoration is planned isn't going to happen because the Navy is going to take care of it with 5-year warfare testing programs.
But won't you agree that there was very little that appeared to be an attempt to clean up the Gulf of Mexico when this thing was coming down? I mean, the United States position was ridiculous. It was clear that BP was pulling the strings, and that there was really, despite the very little media that we were able to see, there didn't seem to be any urgency to this cleanup. I mean, we sent away ships that were willing to help us. We sent away fishermen, local fishermen, when they were trying to save the animals. It was hands off, no media, blackout. It clearly appeared that there was very little interest in really resolving the problem. And so doesn't it make sense that this was the first of many tests to use these chemicals?
Sure. I think that what they did is they knew that Corexit would sink the oil. And they knew how highly toxic it was, because if you go back to when the accident first happened and there was a discussion of Corexit, NOAA knew how bad it was, and the EPA knew how bad it was, and they told BP not to use it. And then all of a sudden we have the Coast Guard advising under this Deepwater Horizon, allowing it to go forward because they wanted to sink the oil. They knew that they could get the majority of the oil up if they left it on top and then sopped it up and sucked it up and got all these ships in to do it, and they didn't want to do it. They wanted to sink it and put it out of sight. And that's exactly what they did, and it's on the bottom along with the toxic chemical. And I can't imagine the burning of the oil and the Corexit on the surface of the Gulf. In other words, burning it instead of picking it up. They knew that if they put the Corexit in the oil, they couldn't use the oil again. So I think that the reason that they tried to sink it, in other words, everywhere they could and sprayed the Gulf, was that they needed to put it on the bottom, because then they wouldn't have to pick it up and then have this toxic, the oil, which already has problems, but they couldn't refine it with the Corexit because it would make a worse environmental problem. So I think there was a plan to sink it, and there was a plan not to. I don't think that they're going to clean up the Gulf. I think there's no plan to clean up the Gulf of Mexico, especially now that they've made it so difficult with the toxic chemical involved, and also sinking a lot of oil to the bottom.
Well, yeah, it would appear that this is one of their favorite test zones for all of their chemical games. I mean, you know, they've already destroyed it, so what's the point of cleaning it up? They're just going to dump more toxic chemicals and warfare and bombs and all their other toys, right?
That's correct.
Well, do we have complete idiots working in the military? I mean, don't they understand that bombing, if their goal was to sink the oil, that bombing the Gulf is not the solution?
But practicing their warfare games is what they want to do, because they can blow up the current arsenal and then they can charge the taxpayers for replacing it. And I don't think that they particularly, I don't think that the top military brass particularly care that having our Navy go to war on our marine mammals in every ocean and island area in the United States. In other words, they're talking about the Marianas Islands near Guam. They're talking about, they've got the Hawaiian Islands. They've got Southern California ranges. There's a new EIS going to come out for Alaska, according to USA Today report. That just came out in August. There's the Atlantic Test Range Complex, the sonar ranges that they've got that they want to test sonar. And a lot of these environmental impact statements are redundant. The Navy has got, I mean, our government, and I include our government because President Obama and none of our senators or congressmen want to have whole public hearings on this to protect human health and our marine mammals. Our government is going to war now means that we practice and we go to war on our environment using the people as guinea pigs, using the marine mammals and these ocean habitats as actually just guinea pigs for our testing. So war has become that it's okay to destroy the environment in the name of war. And that means that the earth, which supports us with food, with clean water and clean air and all these different things, it's okay for the Navy to go to war in our environment. And this irritates me.
You think?
I think.
This irritates me so much that I am about to bleed through my gums.
Well, it means that the areas won't be safe for fishing. The fish in the Gulf of Mexico, for example, exposed to the oil and these chemicals, are just not going to be safe to eat. And it's going to mean that the Navy's going to poison all the other regions as well. I mean, they're not just going to just bomb and blow up the Gulf of Mexico. They fully intend with each of these five-year warfare programs to do that to every ocean area. And it's a disaster in the making. And right now, I'm in Northern California, and right now, the Northwest Training Range Complex, which involves Northern California, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, the Navy Final Environmental Impact Statement has just been released on September 10th, and we have until October 12th to make public comments to the Navy, to NOAA, and to our elected officials, absolutely asking them to postpone and delay this comment period because so few people know about it, and also to ask for congressional hearings. And so right now, this one is the next one in line, but at any time in the Gulf of Mexico or the Atlantic or Alaska or any of these other ranges, these environmental impact statements will come forward, and they're going to try to roll them off the grill like pancakes off a grill. In other words, as fast as they can to get them all implemented. And we're trying to put our foot in the door here. Other people are working in other states as well. But if we don't all join together and say, look, war doesn't mean that the Navy has to have live fire exercises in every ocean area in all our oceans. Period.
Well, the mass public has, let's say the people that buy into the terrorist threat excuse for everything we do, must be looking at this and saying, well, gee willikers, I mean, aren't we the terrorists? We certainly are acting like the global terrorists par excellence. This program, which to me is utterly dark op, has obviously other intentions. I can't believe that we need to evaporate the oceans to test new warfare. There's got to be more to it than this. It's the ultimate question of, is this the beginning of population destruction, elimination of human population on this planet? Because let's talk about that. How many people in the Gulf are extremely ill? And of course, very little about this is coming out. Do you know very much about the blue plague and other things that are happening there?
No, because not much news gets out. I get some alternative sources of news, but there isn't a lot of news that is being, the media isn't covering the subject anymore, and they don't want to talk about the human health problems. They talk about depression, but they, from time to time, the people there have depression, but they don't talk about the health effects. That's a rarity, if at all, now. As a matter of fact, they don't even cover the Gulf since they stopped, since they plugged the well. It's like everything has gone back to normal and is wonderful again.
Yeah, right. So they'll, and the bombing will start when?
Well, the Gulf of the bombing is already going on in some of the ranges, like the Southern California Range Complex and the Hawaiian Complex, and they even want to expand that now. And the EIS for the range complexes in the Gulf of Mexico are online, and the draft EISs have already been put out for public comment. Now we're waiting for another public comment period for NOAA and for these complexes when they put them online so that we can comment. So they're going to roll them through one at a time, but I'm trying to get everyone to protest all of them, not just the one in our area that's critical with this filing date by October 12th. But I think that people should oppose all of this redundant testing and the war, and it will take away the food supply for millions of people because everything that migrates travels up and down all of the ocean areas. It travels into Southern California. The Atlantic is connected to, in other words, other nations as well as ours. It goes up into Canada, and it goes across all the way across the Atlantic to England and those countries over there. They're all going to be impacted because the food supply will be diminished, and the toxic chemicals and other problems will increase for them as well. So it has the implication of putting starvation to many coastal communities that depend upon fish. Which will mean in Africa, this is interesting, if you take away the fish, whenever fishing, overfishing, and whenever the fish are missing along the African coastline, then the local communities have no food supply. So what they start to do is they start to poach in the elephants and they start to poach the animals there. And there's been some recent studies and a couple of programs on PBS on this where as the fishing population declines, then all of the animals that, the elephants and the deer and all the things that we take for granted in Africa are, the intensity of the poaching increases.
Yeah, we're the human race, the ones with the brains, folks. Take a look at what we're doing to our planet. I'm going to open up the show for questions. You're listening to Warrior Rosalind Peterson. We're talking about what's happening to the oceans. We're going to talk about the sky in a minute. Her website is CaliforniaSkyWatch.com and also AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org. So I'm going to throw this open to you because I know that you're outraged, but we've got to do more than be outraged. We've got to band together like we've never banded together before. And you know I'm constantly calling to you, pleading with you to make those calls and letters and protests, but never like now. We've got a deadline, and we have to motivate and mobilize millions of people. Here's the call number, 888-815-9756. It's toll-free in U.S. and Canada. Here's the number again, 888-815-9756. Call in and let's get a dialogue going with Rosalind. Okay, so, you know, here I am in this pristine land in the Azores, and there's a lot of talk about the Gulf Stream simply dying. What is your information about that situation, Rosalind?
Well, if we keep going through all of these testing and everything that we're doing, we could create problems with currents and the Gulf Stream, or make it highly polluting if it does move in its normal way. So the impact of what we do in one area is going to be felt in even the most pristine areas in the world.
Yeah, it's really time for people to understand that there's no isolation. Everything's connected on the planet. But there are, on the internet, we're seeing a lot of images, satellite images, that are showing that the Gulf Stream is all but gone, and so is the North Atlantic stream. And I'd like to know, what information do you have about that?
I don't have a lot. I suspect a couple of things that I think is happening. I think that we're doing so much atmospheric testing, and we're modifying the atmosphere with HARP and other experiments. And so the combination of all the things we're doing is having an effect on the environment. Also, we've got private companies like Dynamat Corporation. We've got Bill Gates. We've got the Air Force and NASA all looking at a hurricane modification. We've got them looking at changing the flight paths of hurricanes by starting storms on the west coast of the United States, which will, when they travel across the United States intensifying, will blow hurricanes off the coast. And as we, so that they don't come up the Gulf of Mexico or they go into other areas. So what we're doing is we're experimenting with the natural forces on Earth. There's some thoughts about that we're changing the jet stream, and that we can do that now, apparently under HARP and some other activities that we're conducting. So all of these experiments are changing our natural environment, and the impacts from those are going to change how the Earth works and how the climate patterns go and different things that are going on. And I think that these are all having their effect. And I write about some of this and put documents on my website in that regard.
Okay, again, for people that are maybe didn't get it the first time, you're talking about CaliforniaSkyWatch.com or AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org?
That's correct.
Either one. That brings us to this. Well, before I move on to chemtrails, the other thing that makes me cranky, would you tell people what NOAA is? A lot of people, you refer to it a lot, and a lot of people are not aware of that organization.
There's two key organizations. There's NASA, which is the National Atmospheric and National Atmospheric and in other words, it's a department of the U.S. Department of Interior. And NASA has a lot of, does the space programs, does the shuttles. It's involved in the Navy with various atmospheric programs and the Air Force. So it has a broad base of, in other words, dealing in the atmosphere with, and it's the National Weather Service is involved in NOAA, which is another Department of the Interior organization. And NOAA does is that it's engaged in climate, it's engaged in weather. It tells you if there's weather modification experiments ongoing at their Colorado offices, which are public record. When they do notify the public that they're happening, but they don't usually cover things like military programs. And both of these organizations, in other words, both NASA and NOAA work in conjunction with each other on some issues, especially when weather is concerned. And they also work together with, in other words, the NASA is with the National Space and what they do is atmospheric testing and upper atmospheric testing. They're always engaged and know about those programs that are going on. So these two agencies cover space and they cover our and our space programs, and they also cover our weather and climate with regard to NOAA. So they're important in that they're key to a lot of what's going on with the military, and they're key to what's going on with, the weather, different types of things. And so this is why it's important that we know about these two organizations.
But in essence, they are the military and the Navy.
Well, NOAA gets funding from the Navy now, so they work in conjunction with each other, and there's no real oversight. And NASA's getting more and more military funding because more and more of the applications that they're using and what they're doing in space is military in nature.
So what is the point, I'm playing the devil's advocate here, of appealing to NOAA when we know that they are pro-military, protesting, pro-HARP, pro-chemtrails?
Well, the only thing that we can do is to begin to push these organizations into upholding the laws that they passed in past years with regard to protection from environmental chemicals, protecting our marine mammals, and upholding the laws. And we need them to uphold the laws rather than to work in conjunction with agencies who want to destroy the laws. And so we carry some weight because they should be enforcing the laws instead of writing permits that allow the taking, for example, of marine mammals. So we have to get our elected officials, who are many of whom are up for election this year, and push them very hard to say, look, unless you're going to have public hearings and enforce the laws and protect our environment, that we're not going to vote for you, or we're not going to vote you into office unless you hold our views on these issues. So our voices and our votes are precious this year, because many people want us either to put them back into office, or they want to be elected to office. And we have to ask them if they're going to uphold the laws. I think that this is a serious issue.
Well, they didn't do a very good job against BP, did they?
No, they didn't do a very good job against BP. But there was never an intent, because the Obama administration came out just before the accident in favor of offshore oil drilling, and he never got Interior Secretary Salazar to enforce the laws and get the Minerals Management Service into inspecting and doing their jobs. It was all going to be a whitewash, and they just hoped that there never would be a problem.
So, Roslyn, what do you propose when you say we need to do certain things? Do you have an organized approach to what you're calling people to do, to service, to assist in protesting and taking action against what's happening?
Yes. We want to deluge for the next month with a toll-free number the offices in Washington, D.C., all the elected officials. Their offices just need to be held hostage by people calling in asking for congressional hearings and a delay in implementing of these Navy warfare testing programs until we can protect our marine mammals and our coasts and to protect public health. And the more that they hear, and the more we keep their switchboards busy and their staff busy dealing with this issue, it will make an impact. And when they come home from office, I mean, all of our congresspeople are up for reelection, and we need to corner them and really say, look, we're not voting for you, nor your opponent, if the case may be, if they don't know about these issues and are willing to take action. So our vote is very important this election year, and we're asking people to file with the Navy and to file protests with the National Marine Fisheries Service and the Department of Interior on these issues, and ask them to delay the deadlines until congressional action on hearings can take place. And in other words, we need to not ask our elected officials when they come for a handout and a monetary handout or our vote. We need to not ask them the questions that the major media ask them about education, for example, the questions asked all the time. What we need them to talk about is the U.S. Navy warfare testing program on all of our oceans. We need to ask them questions about geoengineering and are they going to allow for solar radiation management to take place in the United States, putting particles and chemicals into our atmosphere to reduce the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth. The U.S. Science and Technology Committee geoengineering report, for example, will be out on October 15th, I think they said. And what's going to happen is that they want to experiment, put up fake clouds, make them more reflective. They want to do a whole series of things that will change our very environment and could reduce crop production just because they lower the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth. And to do that, they're going to put up toxic chemicals, admittedly, in their hearings, that will cause acid rain, that will pollute our water, change the pH of our soil, and pollute it. And yet, they want to go ahead and experiment with these. So just
they
like
already
the
are.
Navy. Huh? And they already are in some. Sure.
You mean,
oh, yeah.
Here I am in the Azores Islands, the middle of the Atlantic. We have chemtrails here, too.
Yes. And those what they call persistent jet contrails, according to NASA and Stanford studies and a book called Global Aviation and the Atmosphere, and its impact. It's a book about the aviation impact on the global atmosphere is what it is. And what they say is that these persistent jet contrails that create the man-made clouds, and these are studies going back many years, that they're changing the climate. They're exacerbating global warming. These persistent clouds can last up, and haze can last up to 20 hours just from one jet and cover 4,000 kilometers. They're increasing the amount of asthma in the country. There's a lot of, they're reducing the amount of vitamin D, that people have, and there's related health effects to that as well. So there's a lot on my website about this issue as well, and it needs to be addressed.
So, yeah, it certainly does. Do you have an answer to the people I know are listening saying, I'm afraid to put my name on anything to be incriminated as a protester against the Navy?
Yes. You can decide that you're not going to object, and you can just call your congressman or something and leave a message. That's fine, too. But what happens is that thousands of people have put their names on these petitions across the United States over the last year and a half. There's been a lot. I mean, we're talking many, many people. And we have the right in this country to protest. And if they feel insecure in putting their name on something to the Navy, they can always, send it to their congressman. They can always take other actions, letters to the editor, other things. But you see, they work for us. And at some point, we have to stand up and say no, or else we're going to put our head in the sand, and we're going to have these Navy warfare programs, and we're going to lose. And every time we do nothing, we lose more ground on these issues. And so I made a decision, my website, and of course I don't record anyone that goes to my website, and no one can put public comments on my website except me at this point. But the website is designed to give you the information to empower you to take action. And those that are afraid, you're going to find that more and more you're going to be afraid, and more you're going to be sick and have health problems, or your environment around you is going to decline. And eventually, one day, in other words, your health costs are going to be astronomical from taking care of the health effects from all these programs. So you're going to find that there's nowhere to go and hide. One day you're going to have to stand up. And if we all stand up together, I mean, we are the people of the United States, and we are the ones that they are supposedly working for. And if we start to say no, it just isn't going to be possible to come after us in the numbers that could protest and stand up against them. And we're standing up against the government, too. In other words, what, they're going to send someone out to get all of us for opposing a Navy position that's wrong? Or are we just going to allow the Navy to go to war on everything and use us as the guinea pigs? I mean, that's our choice. I really think that's our choice.
Well, I say a ho great spirit on that, especially your words. We are the people, and it's not just the people of the United States. This is a global situation. There are no borders here, and there are no limits, as Rosalind said, to which oceans are targeted next. Whatever they want to do, they're doing, and we sit in silence. Some of us are brazen warriors, like Rosalind and me and Don, who runs BBS, and so many other peoples who are really putting themselves out there, trying to make a difference. And many of you are doing the same, but we need more voice here. We need you to stop being in fear and get out there, make those calls, sign the petitions, protest, 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 because it's true. It's now or never, folks. Now, there's a feeling, a sentiment in our communities that the universe knows what to do and the planet knows what it wants needs to do. And to a certain extent, I, of course, support that theory, but I'm also a warrior for this planet. And we are at a crossroad here. There's no question about it. It's total attack on this planet. It's not just a United States situation. It is the One World Order plan for whatever their delusion is of what they want to bring this planet down to. We cannot and we will not let it happen. Now, we've got a deadline here, October 5th, and I want you to listen. October 12th. Let's tell them, yeah. October the 5th, so we'll make sure everybody gets a move on. You have all the information that you need here. I mean, this is a fabulous site, I'm sorry, I get tongue-tied on this. You want to say it for me, Rosalind?
Sure. It's the agriculturedefensecoalition.org. And if you click on U.S. Navy, you can find all the documents and my research on government documents on that subject for every region of, in other words, every island area, every region, including the Gulf of Mexico. And the petitions are on the site. So if you go there, there's action things that you can do. You can call the U.S. Congress toll-free at 1-866-220-0044. You'll get a switchboard there. It's toll-free, and you can ask for any congressman or any senator. And it's time we keep them busy on these issues and make sure that they understand that we don't want to put up with this anymore, that war on us and our oceans and our land areas is not acceptable, and that there must be some other ways that the Navy and the Air Force can practice without destroying our environment.
What is it that they have to practice anyway? I don't get this.
Well, one Hellfire missile.
How many more times around? We can destroy the planet around, I think, 100 times around. 100 times. How much more practice do they need?
Well, I'm not sure, because here's the rub. One Hellfire missile, and they intend to set off about 5,000 per year, I think, in our range if it goes through. We already know the capability of the Hellfire missile. It costs about $58,000 to fire off one Hellfire missile and explode it. And that doesn't include the manpower, the personnel, and all the other things that are involved in that. And we know what the capabilities of the Hellfire missile are. We know how far they travel. We've used them in a couple of wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So there's no surprise about the Hellfire missile. So we're going to take thousands of them in each of these ranges and fire them all off along with, I'm not saying that this is the only one, I'm just using this as one example. And then the military is going to come back with the Pentagon budget and say, well, we need to replace all this arsenal because we use them all in practice. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, they don't need to practice with live fire ammunition. We already know the capabilities of the Hellfire missile. They could practice in other areas if they need to test one or two, but once they test them, there's no point in shooting them off by the thousands. And all of these other things that they're going to be testing, some are classified issues, but they're going to be testing them on us, over land and in our oceans. This is not, in other words, absolutely not a direction to be going in. And if this is what war has become, do we as Americans, for example, think that this is that warfare should be conducted in all these places, all these practice ranges, the Nevada test site? If they need to test the Hellfire missile, they could do it at the Nevada test site. They certainly don't have to blow up 5,000 in every region of the Atlantic, the Pacific, and the Gulf of Mexico by the thousands multiplied for each range. That's just a costly event that isn't going to gain anything. I mean, practice, it's ridiculous.
Unless you have a bigger agenda, which is to kill off mass numbers of the population, which we know has been discussed by the Rothschilds and other big kahunas of the one world government.
Well, we talk about the one world order, which when Bush won, mentioned it, really got many people in the United States upset about talking about a one world order. Now we're talking about global governance. Well, that's one world order, just another way to say it. And that a few will be in charge of everything, our natural resources, the food we eat, the type of food we eat, the chemicals needed to grow the food we eat. In other words, a corporate world where the few will reign and the rest of us will be slaves to the system. And guinea pigs for testing for the rest of our lives. And if we want to accept that, and then that's up to us to decide right now. But that's the direction that we're heading. And with these corporations with genetically modified foods, for example, they got tomatoes genetically modified so that they would take longer to ripen. So instead of during a growing season, you could get several crops of tomatoes off one plant over time. Now they've got it down to where you might only get one crop, and it may not ripen very well because they've delayed the ripening process. They're doing that for all the major food groups, the corn, the rice, the potatoes, cantaloupes, every major food group now, they're trying to get to ripen later. They're changing the components of it. Some seeds now, they consider the seed itself a pesticide itself. In other words, it's a registered pesticide because it carries so many pesticides inside the seed that will kill this or that in the ground itself when planted. So, in other words, do we want to live this life? I mean, I'm not sure that we do, but I'm not sure that people understand that this is our future unless we say no.
And these, let's call them, well, we've heard them called the Illuminati, reptiles, and every other description, but these ruling elite, they have to eat the food, they have to breathe the air. What's the lowdown? What in your mind, I realize you're very scientific and very objective as well, but what's the skivvy in your opinion as to how they perceive being victimized by their own violent destruction of the planet? I mean, what do they do? Do they go underground or evacuate to Mars or what?
Well, there's no place for them to escape, but they believe in their own rhetoric. They believe that technology will solve every problem. They believe that they can... chemical companies, when they started out in the 1940s in the United States, Dow Chemical and these chemical companies started making pesticides and DDT. They said, oh, you can drink it. It's so safe. You can drink it. It's so safe that you can spray it on anything. You can spray it on your children, and they did. And you can spray it in your houses and everything. And then all of a sudden there was a revolution coming about when Rachel Carson wrote her book. But the chemical companies to this day feel that there's no harm that can come to you. They want to sell you that, you know, tobacco smoking is safe. And all those tobacco company executives got up and lied and said no, they didn't know about that smoking was harmful or could cause cancer. The thing is that even when they know that it's not safe, they're selling this to the public and they have the money to do it. And so we're supposed to buy into this, that it's safe and that they know best and that these scientists that want to do these things and these corporations know best. And
right,
somewhere,
but what end? To see their one generation live through it? I mean, let's be realistic. Even the most demonic corporate CEO has to understand that pushing through these violent, toxic agendas means the destruction of the planet. Don't these people have children?
They do, but see, what they feel is that they're immune to this.
Aha!
They feel that they may well be.
They may have some kind of chemical antidote in their blue blood to...
Well, I think they feel that they're immune, but also they live for right now. In other words, live for today, collect your profit for the day, go on vacation on your big yachts and do all these things, and we can live in the world as we want it, and we'll just pretend, and we can pretend that, in other words, we have this pretend world we live in because we're so rich. And what happens is they feel like they're bulletproof in their armored vest of money and corporate power. And they're not. The only thing is, they're still going to have children that are going to have birth defects. They're still, when you take away the sunlight, their children are still going to get rickets. It isn't like they are inoculated. But you see, in the live for today motive and this grand scheme that technology can solve everything, they can go ahead.
Right. I hope that they take a jump off of their yachts into the toxic ocean and feel what it feels like to be a whale that's being burned to death by toxic poisoning. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Right. I agree with that. And the other thing is that look at this BP executive, Tony, I can't remember his name. But anyway, the BP executive that was running around while the Gulf, while the oil spill was happening in the Gulf. And finally he says, well, I want my life back. And then he goes on a yacht, and then he gets on his yacht and goes on a yacht race. He didn't go on a yacht race. He didn't decide to go to the Gulf of Mexico and have a yacht race in the Gulf of Mexico through the muck. Oh no, he went to some pristine place on his yacht. See, untouched by what his corporation had done. That's the mentality here. Is that, in other words, if you have a problem over there, well, that's too bad for you. But I live in this rarefied air over here, and you see, and I can have my life back that won't be involved in living in the Gulf of Mexico like the people that live there do.
Exactly. You see, and how long have I said this to people?
Attitude.
It's about war. As long as it's over there, it somehow isn't going to touch you, and you feel sorry for those poor people, and you continue to go about your business. It isn't over there anymore. It's over everywhere. People, you have got to, I plead with you, pick up your telephones, write your emails, go to Rosalind's site. I'm going to give it to you once again. I'm going to try again because for some reason I get tongue-tied. AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org. Find out more about the sky and the poisons and the toxins of the sky, CaliforniaSkyWatch.com. Do what you can to meet this deadline, to express to everyone you know that there's never been a time that's more important than you get off of your assets and voice your concern and your protest. Rosalind, we need an upside on this to close this show.
Well, I have an upside for you. Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison has had a Senate bill to mitigate and modify our weather without public consent or oversight. And for the last 5 years, due to the effort of all the people that engaged on not wanting their weather modified by anyone without their consent, her bill has been defeated. And this year, we think for the fifth year running in a row, we're successfully having her bill brought to the floor of the Senate for passage. So there are successes here. And we have delayed the Navy implementing their warfare testing program here because of our protests since February 2009. So
you
I want you to know.
You are a spirit warrior, Rosalind. I celebrate you and your vision and your courage, and I consider you among the people I call brazen warriors, and I will always support you and do everything I can to turn people on to what you're trying to do for this planet.
Well, thank you, and thank you for allowing me a voice on your program as well.
Anytime, lady, anytime. All right, people, I have got to, sadly, I've got to leave now because we've got our time frame up. You've been listening to, I'll call her again, a brazen warrior, Rosalind Peterson, fighting for planet Earth. She's available at CaliforniaSkyWatch.com, AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org. You can get everything you need there to find out what to do. When you write to me and say, Patricia, what can we do? Here it is. Do this. Call, write, as much as you can. The numbers are there. Your senators, they want your vote. Never feel it doesn't matter. It does. And now show and tell time. Thank you, people. I'm going to ask my producer if we can exceptionally use this show outside the archives and broadcast it all over the web. So let me know if you've got a place where we can place this interview, and we will try to blast the internet. Please help. Thank you, Rosalind, once again. I hope you'll come back again, because you always have a platform on my show.
Well, thank you very much, and it's been a pleasure being here with you today.
Thank you so much. Okay, people, I have to go. I'm here in the Azores. It's a pure, pristine, beautiful place. The whales and dolphins are exquisite, and let's hope that we do what we can to make sure they continue to sing the song of planet Earth through our vast oceans and to live to see us through. Bye-bye, everybody. This is Patricia Corey. You've been listening to Before We Leave. See, that's a Freudian slip. You've been listening to Beyond the Matrix, the radio show that dares you, implores you, to think outside the box.